Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Poisoner's Cabinet. I'm Sinead.
And I'm Nick.
And this is your weekly podcast exploring the lives of the great poisoners, macabre murders from across the centuries, and creating curious cocktails inspired by the tales that we tell. And it's episode 56!
It is. Season 2 something. I can't remember.
See, I knew it. I knew you'd forget the numbers of the seasons. You get all high and mighty.
4, 5, 28. Dunno.
Yeah, 56. I'm just quietly keeping
I've lost,
count.
I've lost good. Track.
How are you, Nick?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Hey, can't complain. Been at work. Not been doing much else. Though, next week is... can sit in the garden.
Garden cans.
Legally allowed to sit in the garden. So that's quite exciting.
With other people.
Not long to go. No, yeah, not just by yourself.
They're not letting you out into that. You can go into the garden for your daily exercise. Alone. So alone.
With more people. So very soon. Yeah, that's quite exciting.
Were any poisonings this week?
No. So again, it's all very quiet out there. It's very quiet. People have got other things going on.
You're just in preparation for the garden cans. Well, because you can invite people into your garden. You can, hopefully you'll have planted the lovely seeds that Carla Valentine sent us, which yes. are resplendent in their belladonna-y goodness.
I can just give that to everyone.
Exactly, yes. You don't need to poison anyone this week because they're going
have
to
have a lovely bouquet.
They're going to die as soon as they step into your house. But also, as we established on Patreon this week, you'll pee on people if they stay too long.
I thought, did we? But I thought, yes, we did.
Yes, you very much did say that.
That was such a long time ago.
Well, speaking of peeing on people, I think it's time for us to thank our Patreon subscribers, because they know what we're talking about.
That's how we do thank people. So, thank you to Deezer Turner, who's in for a delightful surprise.
And to Lacey from Hardly Paranormal, the wonderful podcast. We love you, Lacey. Thank you for joining us.
Very good. Thank you.
As per usual, my husband is downstairs playing FIFA online. And just as we were talking about peeing on people, you just heard this noise from downstairs going, oh!
No, I didn't hear that, but I'll take your word for it.
No, I did. People on the podcast will hear it. Well, Nick. Are you ready to drink cocktails and talk about poison?
Oh, yeah, sure right I am. You've promised me a good one, so yep.
Or we could drink poison and talk about cocktails.
Not today, I think.
No, we should go with the first one. Okay, we're racing through this.
Yes,
great.
Rattling through this introduction nonsense. Hello, how are you? Get on with it.
When does the drinking start?
It's late. I want to go to bed. Come on.
Horror of horrors, people. I started recording this at 8 o'clock at night, and Nick is not best pleased.
8 o'clock. Ludicrous hour for a recording.
He's already in his smoking jacket and wearing his nightcap.
The hot water bottle shall be cold by the time I get upstairs now.
You mean the boy hasn't turned down your bed with the bedpan, where they put hot coals into a bed? They used to do that in the olden times, didn't they?
Not in a bedpan, they didn't.
Oh, no. What was it called? Bed warming pan.
A warming pan.
Oh, I'm sorry. That was such a leap away. You could get the two
well,
confused.
Well, no, but a bedpan is what you're peeing when you're in hospital. So you don't want coals in that.
Well, you don't want to get the two confused. Pee on some coals and then put some urine in your bed.
So these are not things to get mixed up.
No. Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you have a supply of both of them in the house. So. Okay, we're going to go with the first one. Hooray, hooray, hooray. It's my story this week, but we can't possibly tell a story without a cocktail in hand. Oh, yes, it's cocktail time.
Cocktail time.
I have eaten very little this week due to my lovely new healthy eating regime, so I will be drunk within sips of this, whatever we do.
Well, that sounds great fun.
It is. As you know, every week we choose a secret ingredient that is inspired by the tale that we tell and will flavour our cocktail of the week. My story, so my pick. And this week's secret ingredient, Nick, is...
is...
fat.
Lovely.
Lovely.
Everyone likes a bit of fat.
Lovely fat. I'm so sorry to everyone who saw the
picture. It was a delightful picture.
Picture
you put up there. That was like, ew.
You'll understand why, but yes, I couldn't just put jars of stuff up and people were going, is that silly string? Or they were, oh, no, no, what are you doing, woman? Yes, fat, fat, good fats, bad fats, whatever. We'll have all of them. But yes, we don't often have a lot of fat in our drinks, do we?
This is true. We don't often. But so I thought it's time for a change, I thought.
It's not a common ingredient in drinks, but I don't know. I trust you, Nick. I trust you.
Well, it might be more common.
Oh, well, with fat as the ingredient, what have you come up with?
We have referenced this in a previous episode when we did bacon as a secret ingredient.
Bacon!
And we did our candied bacon. And we did want to mention this. So we have, well, I have. It has been made.
It has been done.
It has been done. More. See, this is the season of experimentation and chemistry.
It is truly the poisoner's cabinet.
So we have a stash now of fat-washed bourbon.
Oh my God. Fat-washed bourbon. Yes, we did talk about that before. Which is, I'm very intrigued and also, what about it?
Yeah, so I've never had this. It has a big reputation of being quite delicious and lovely, and people do it a lot, or it's available in cocktail bars and things a lot. I think it's regularly done at home, and it's always something I wanted to try. I've never done it, never tried a cocktail with it, so this is the homemade version.
So again, we've given you just a corker of an ingredient that you can just go to your cupboard, people, and pull out. But we'll talk through the method by which you create fat washed bourbon. But what are we going to make cocktail wise?
Well, we're going to keep it simple because I'm very intrigued to see how this actually tastes. So we're going to keep it very simple. We're going to go with an old fashioned.
Yay! An old fashioned.
Simple, not too much else in there. So we really see what's going on. So that's what we're going to do today.
I'm excited. So as ever, Nick has delivered me a selection of the ingredients. Obviously, he had to fat wash some bourbon, but it's time for us to go and construct a couple of options this week that we can work our way through. So time for us to go into our isolation kitchens and shake up a storm. So we'll see you in a minute.
We'll see you in a bit.
And we're back.
Hello.
Oh, exciting week.
Exciting times.
A classic cocktail, but with a twist.
With a twist. With a twist indeed.
Now, I've not been into old fashions before, only very recently getting into the bourbon. But I'm very excited for this because of the old fat-washed bourbon.
Well, indeed.
Going to talk us through it first, or are we going to taste it?
Well, let's taste it and then we'll reveal the horrible methods of its manufacture afterwards. So, I mean, we have actually made two old fashions. I've made one with the fat washed bourbon, and then one with exactly the same bourbon, but not fat washed.
Ah, fat free almost.
We're going to do a fat free bourbon. So we're going to do a contrast and compare experimentation to see, does it actually make that much of a difference? Which I'm intrigued to find out.
We'll go through the ingredients in a moment, but we're going to dive in and taste this classic bourbon cocktail, starting with the fat-washed bourbon. Ooh, shaky, shaky, shaky. Yeah, stirry.
A bit of a swizzle.
Do I see it? I don't know. Okay.
What do you see?
I'll tell you in a minute. Let's taste it first. Okay, cheers.
Cheers. It's very pleasant. Bourbon-y.
Bourbon-y. Bold. Yeah, okay. So that's one version. Yeah, it's very nice, old-fashioned. That one was a bit stronger than I thought.
So now I'm going to try the non-fat-washy one.
Okay, I'm going to do the same too.
If it takes any difference whatsoever.
Okay, let's do it again. All right, cheers. Merry Christmas.
Ooh, you can.
Oh, you definitely can.
I didn't think you were going to. I thought it was me one going, I don't know which one's which. But you actually can taste the difference. And I do prefer the fat wash one.
That's really weird. It's not what you would think, though, people. It's not what you would think. Okay, Nick, I think you need to talk us through it so everyone understands what the hell is going on in here.
Right. So basically, fat washing, you can do it with pretty much any fat, really. I've done it with bacon fat.
Because you're a god, that's why.
Because it's, well, bourbon and bacon is a classic combination.
Oh yeah, especially in the mornings.
Cooked up a load of bacon, ate the bacon.
It was a hard day for you, wasn't it?
It was a dreadful, dreadful... I mean, I have to eat a whole packet of bacon for the podcast.
You're like Pinchy the Lobster in The Simpsons.
Once you've consumed the bacon, you should be left with a big old pan full of bacon fat.
Nice.
Which basically you just pour into your bourbon. I made it with half a bottle of bourbon I used. So about 375 mils?
Yeah.
Ish.
Just say half a bottle. People understand what a bottle is.
half a bottle of bourbon and poured bacon fat into it and it went all fizzly spitty for a bit. Sealed up the bottle, gave it a shake and left it overnight.
Left it.
To do its thing.
The flavours are supposed to what, infuse with
yes,
the
so it sort of infuses over of overnight. When you read about it, there are stories of it taking on quite a bacony characteristic.
It depends what bacon you used.
This hasn't, I don't think, done okay. that.
No, I don't think so and either.
I'm not getting a bacony flavour. But what it does, it's quite interesting, is that sort of the fat molecules in it sort of soften the edges of the bourbon and make it a lot smoother and almost slightly silkier as well to drink. So obviously, once you've left it to infuse overnight or whatever, you then strain out the big lumps of fat and bits of bacon and stuff like that. So you're not getting that in your glass. You strain it through muslin.
Yeah, we're not just drinking bourbon through a big layer of fat, much as we'd love to.
You get rid of all that, strain it out a couple of times until you're left with a clear, non-bitty bourbon.
I was worried a minute ago that my bourbon with the ice in it had got a bit of solidified fat suddenly because of the ice. But it wasn't. It was just a bit of ice. And
it has been strained about three or four times. So there's no way there's any fat or bits of bacon or anything left in this. And I am amazed how much of a difference that has actually made.
It really does. I'm double tasting again. Again, I've got two drinks. I've just been sitting here for the last 3 minutes holding two drinks going, whoa.
Yeah, I'm really surprised by that.
Yeah, you would expect with a bacon fat washed drink, you'd be getting a big hit of bacon. But the fat wash version it definitely tastes silkier.
It just smooths it all down and things.
It's still quite strong if you're not a whiskey drinker, a bourbon drinker. This is not going to take away that delightful whiskey kick, but it's just going to round the edges, as you said. Yeah.
No, that's good. I mean, for those unsure, okay, an old fashioned. Go through that. It's basically, again, there are loads of different versions. The one I've done is a sugar cube. So I've chosen a Demerara brown sugar cube in the bottom of your old-fashioned glass, a tumbler. Douse that with a few dashes of bitters. I've used Angosturas. You can get sort of like proper or specifically designed old-fashioned bitters and stuff like that. I've used Angostura. And I left it for a couple of minutes to sort of dissolve a bit and then gave it a good old smash with your muddler. The back of a spoon or something. Put my ice cube in, gave it a bit of a swirl just with the ice cube to get the ice to dilute a little bit, and then 1.5 ounces of bourbon in the glass.
Delicious.
And that's it. So it is one of the most uncomplicated cocktails you're going to make. Yeah, and the fat wash bourbon makes such a difference. I am really surprised by that.
I am too. My personal favourite recipe for an old-fashioned, there are, as we said, many versions out there. I think it's one that Difford shared. Again, it's using bourbon, but in the bottom of the glass, you use the Angostura bitters. You take a slice of orange, because often old-fashions are garnished with orange. Slice the orange, put it in the bottom, a little squirt of maple syrup, or you can use Demerara sugar, or you could use another kind of syrup. I've even used agave syrup if I've had that in the cupboard. But with the orange and the bitters and your sugar, mash that up and literally you mash the fruit in there. It's a thin slice of orange. Then the ice, as you said, then the bourbon on top, little swizzle around. And that is a goddamn delight. That is really, really nice. If you want to take the harsh edge of the whiskey off, and you want to have something fruity and sweet and delightful and aromatic, that is a lovely, lovely version of an old-fashioned if you want to try something a little bit different. But we have a newcomer to the ring. Yeah. I love it. All of you can make an old-fashioned on Friday night. Don't panic. Don't come at us about all our experimenting. You have time to make a few old-fashions by the time this episode comes out and to start infusing your bourbon, and you get to make a load of bacon.
Yeah, I mean, what's not to love, really?
What's not to love? What kind of bacon did you use?
I used bacon I got from the supermarket.
Was like back bacon, streaky bacon?
It was back bacon.
Smoked bacon?
It was smoked bacon.
Nice, nice.
But it wasn't the fanciest of bacons, but it was just...
What?
Because I didn't go to the fancy pig shop. I went where I passed on my way home.
Why have I never heard of the fancy pig shop? Because that sounds amazing. That sounds like a great place to hang out and get fancy pig meat, also served by a fancy pig in a top hat, that I would hope.
Quite right.
Yay. So now we have two old fashions. So basically we've got two lots of bourbon in front of us.
I've got two old fashions and a gin and tonic.
It's
going well.
Well, thankfully, Nick, it's not your story this week.
Hurrah for that.
But you have played a blinder with another experimental cocktail. Living for the experimental cocktails these days, guys.
Yeah,
so,
we like
yeah,
it.
If there's Nick is on a roll, so any more experimenting that you'd like him to do, cocktail based or not, you know, that's the different tier on Patreon. Get in touch and let us know what you'd like us to rustle up in the poisonous cabinet kitchen.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
But with our old fashions firmly in hand, fat washed to perfection. Are you ready for a story, Nick?
Yes. Yes, I think so.
And it's a good one this week.
Slightly concerned about where the fat comes into it.
Oh, you should be. You should be. This is an exceptional tale. And we are going to Spain.
We've not been to Spain, have we?
I don't think we have on the main episode. We've danced there once on Patreon.
Well, brief excursion. Someone on a boat went to Spain once. But that's about it.
That was the crux of all of Nick's story. Someone on a boat went to Spain and they died. It was a great day. No, we are properly going to Spain. Gather round, children, for I'm going to tell you the chilling tale of Manuel Blanco Ramasanta.
Ooh.
Excellent accent there.
Excellent, excellent name and excellent accent work going on there.
Oh, yes, yes. Now, brace yourself.
Oh God!
Oh no! It's good. Brace yourself.
Okay.
Not bad. Brace yourself. Where you go? Oh, this isn't going to be fun. Trust me. Now let us start with Manuel. He was born in 1809 in the Orense province. I hope I'm saying that right. In Spain. Write in. Come at me for the pronunciation. Record messages of you saying the names of the places that I'm saying wrong because I like it. It's soothing. But yes, Manuel was born in 1809. And, well, quite a bit is known about his childhood.
Is it? My God, that makes a change.
Yes, it's quite pivotal to his life, I would say. Manuel did not have a great start in life. Yes, his birth was difficult. Difficult on the mother. It was a tricky birth. And when he emerged... I've written that without really thinking that through, haven't I? Emerged from down there. He was declared an unknown critter by the doctors.
Nice. Nice.
Mm.
That's good to have in your birth certificate.
Yes, he had what can only be assumed birth defects that made it impossible to tell if he was a boy or a girl.
Mm-hmm.
So whether he was intersex, whether he had other physical deformities they'd not encountered, we don't know. Some say he was the youngest child of five. Others say he was the seventh son of a seventh son.
No, he wasn't.
I really don't think he was. I think there were five kids, that's it. I read one report and they said he's a seventh son. I was like, no, he wasn't. No, I didn't know him, and even I know that. No. He was as young as a five. As I said, did not know if he was a boy or a girl. But the family went with girl.
Okay.
And he was first named Manuela.
Nice. Okay.
He was dressed as a girl, educated and treated as one, right up until the age of six.
Okay.
When the doctors or someone finally noticed he was, in fact, a boy.
Right. Okay.
And that's got to be pretty tough.
Yeah.
This question mark over his gender. It wasn't worked out until the age of six.
Bloody hell.
And by that time, Manuela had obviously been raised as a girl. He didn't know any different. He had been treated a certain way all of his life, but suddenly was told he have to change. You have to transform into a man. Now, no more dresses and dolls for you. You have to act and speak like a boy.
You have to go out bullfighting now.
Exactly. Take this cape and out you go. Bring me back a bull. I don't think that's how it works. Well, we don't know. We never raised a boy. They didn't actually change his name to Manuel until he was eight.
Right. So he had a girl's name, but was expected to be behave and be like a boy.
All they had to do was remove the A.
Yeah, it's not a complex task.
I know. It was convenient they called him Manuela.
Well, that's true.
If they'd called him Bruce, then...
As so many Spanish families do.
No, Petunia, actually, is a boy. Then Petunia, Petunii.
Those classic Petunio. Spanish names.
So it's not a brilliant start to life for him. Confusing, I should say. But Manuel, as he was now known, was very bright as a child. He learned to read and write quite young, which we can probably assume that means he came from a wealthy family.
Yes.
Also, his chances for an education would have improved when they realised he was a boy. Pump all the money into that. Great, excellent, we've got a boy. Not that it made much of a difference. He went on to have further trouble in his teens, because after having to suddenly become a boy after being raised a girl, into his teens he stopped growing.
Mm.
He was very, very short in his teenage years, and he would never grow beyond. People differ between 4'11" at the most and 4'6" at the smallest. So it's no great.
That is quite wee.
It is. He's also blonde and tender looking. He still went on to forge a good, honest living as a tailor. Some people called him a dressmaker, probably because they were being a bit unfair. This persistent idea that because of the way he was raised as a baby, he must be effeminate in his youth and his adulthood. But maybe that was nasty rumours. There are reports that Manuel got married in his late teens. Hurrah, hurrah, hurrah. But the happiness was short-lived, for his wife died suddenly when he was 24.
Boo.
Nothing seemingly untoward about this, but it was enough to change the course of Manuel's life. He was settled as a tailor, but he decides that he's going to go and become a travelling salesman. What he was selling at the time isn't exactly clear when he started out on this path, but maybe he just went, I'm going to be a travelling salesman, and walked out the door. And everyone went, okay.
Okay, off you go.
You'll sell your story. But what we do know is that as well as this sales business he had on his side, he also acted as a guide for people travelling through the mountains of northern Spain across various regions. You've got to think, we're in the 1800s. Not a lot of easy maps through the area.
Nope, indeed, absolutely.
There's no Google Maps there.
Nope.
There's no tour guys driving around 4x4s. You would need a guide. You would need someone to show you the paths through the mountains. And this is also a period of time where there's a lot of issues in northern Spain. There was actually a massive famine that would set in later in his life, which was causing a lot of people to migrate and to move around the area to look for food, essentially. So, yeah, it's a lucrative business. So off he went. Mm. Spent around the next decade selling his wares and guiding people over the rocky parts of the Spanish mountains with the knapsack on his back. Da, da. He didn't. I don't know. There's no reports of knapsacks.
Da,
but I like to picture it. I know. Yeah, it's a shame, isn't it? But.
But.
In 1844, Manuel's simple life had turned rather complicated.
Mm.
A constable named Vicente Fernandez came looking for him. There's some excellent names all the way through
good.
This, by the
I like
way.
A good name.
They came looking for Manuel to collect a debt of 600 real, I think that was the currency mm-hmm. at the time, that he owed to a supplier for some of the goods he was flogging. He owed this debt, and the constable comes a-knocking. Manuel did not pay the debt. And Vicente forgot all about it. Forgot all about it on account of the fact that he was dead. Dead.
It does make one forgetful.
I find it does. Yes, around this time in Manuel's life, the constable's dead body was discovered after he had gone searching for Manuel, and Manuel himself had fled the region. Now, the details of this death are scant and few and far between, but it was pretty obvious to the authorities that this was unnatural causes and Manuel was to blame, however this man died. And a trial was held. Manuel was found guilty of murder and sentenced to 10 years in jail.
10 years for murder doesn't seem a lot.
No, it's not a lot, especially if you're not there.
Oh, right, okay, he's not even there at the time. Brilliant.
Yeah, it was all held in absentia because Manuel had fled. He'd fled the region. So they held him.
Because he's in the mountains somewhere.
Yeah, he'd run away. But the judge was, no, we shall try him in absentia, and held a huge trial. And then he had 10 years. He's not here. No one will suffer for this. There's a reason for holding a trial in absentia, because it would mean that Manuel was now on the run, essentially, in Spain. If he was ever found. Yes, he's a fugitive. And he does very fugitive-y things. He takes refuge in abandoned shelters in the countryside.
Nice.
Yes, this small, dwarfish man creeping about trying to conceal his identity. But he isn't caught, and he travels around for years in secret, desperate to avoid capture. And so he will take menial jobs wherever he could in the mountain villages around this region of Spain. And when he was in the villages, he would befriend local women and offer to help them with their dressmaking, as he was trained, their laundry. He could make yarn. He could clean their houses. He could do their local crafts or cook for them.
They're generally quite feminine-related professions at
Indeed.
The time.
Indeed. Any self-respecting man would have turned their nose up at such tasks. But Manuel, who was described by people as being too gentle and effeminate, and was given some names in Spanish that I won't repeat, seemed to gravitate these simple chores for the ladies and found himself a nice, simple business in each of these villages. No one would ever ask questions of him. He was a small, unassuming man who would just help out around. And for this reason, he was very much trusted by the women and the children of the villages he visited and of the villages he lived in for times. He once again decided to return to working as a mountain guide for travellers. He was a trustworthy, simple man. He knew the mountain regions well, so he could guide them through or direct them on their travels safely. So off these women and children would go on their journeys across the mountains with Manuel as their faithful guide. And no one worried about them at all.
No, not why would you? Such a trustworthy chap, he sounds like.
Absolutely. And no one had to worry, because letters would arrive home telling their loved ones that they had arrived at their destination safely, or simply they were having a lovely time on the mountain trails. It's wonderful mountain trails. Beautiful scenery.
Beautiful. It's lovely.
Beautiful. Picture the colours, children. But as the weeks wore on, it became clear that none of these people had actually reached their final destination.
No.
And certainly none would be returning home. Yet the disappearances were not noticed for several weeks.
Well, I suppose, these trips take a long time, so you're not going to notice for a while if someone's not come back.
And we're not in the time of reliable communications.
Yes, you can't pick up the phone and go, you're there.
Hopefully with someone at the other end. You don't just pick up, that's not how phones work, you know that. You don't pick up a phone, hey, are you there? Hello?
That's how you make friends.
Hello, operator. No one has to question anything. You know, there were some worries that Manuel had been spotted in the villages close to his home or in his home village, trying to sell clothing and possessions that didn't seem like they belonged to him. But, you know, no one was really sure where these items had come from. If he had acquired them, he was a travelling salesman. He did menial jobs around. Perhaps people had gifted him. Yep. Certain things that they didn't need that he could sell. And also Manuel didn't really need the money. I mean, he was a guide as a hobby and that brought him in some coins. He was also doing very well for himself as he'd found a good trade selling wonderful locally made soap.
Nice.
Nice soaps.
Do I really know what this, the way this is going?
There was a lot of lavender around.
Is there? Right. Okay.
Anyway. So as we said, without reliable communications in these mountain villages and the fact that it's the 18 goddamn hundreds, there was still the faint hope that these people might turn up, either at their destination or return home. But as the days wore on, search parties were sent out onto the mountain trails to find traces of their loved ones who had gone astray.
Was Manuel leading these search parties?
He was pointing out the scenery as he went. This is the best pine tree ever. We have walked for 5 minutes. Please let us carry on. You're awful. Stop selling us soap. And also, what does that say about our village that you're selling soap? You're the only guy selling soap. We don't smell. But as the search parties went on and they went into the mountainous regions and they followed the trails, what they did find would turn their stomachs, because they did indeed find some of the women who had vanished. And they found their bodies mutilated to almost beyond recognition, as if they had been savaged by some terrible beast.
Terrible beastie, terrible Spanish beastie in the mountains.
It's a beastie, run!
It's a beastie.
You can imagine the panic and the fear that has struck into the hearts of the villagers.
Beasties
will do that. You know, were the travellers who wandered off into the mountains prey to some hideous creature up there, a bear, a wolf, or something worse, torn to shreds, or carried off whole and eaten in some grim lair so they can't find traces of them? My God, our women and children! Or was the true horror closer to home? In 1852, after all these investigations, a complaint was finally made to the police in the city of Escolana that Manuel had been tricking women by posing as a well-meaning guide and then had done away with them in order to sell their goods for himself. What is worse is that the goods that Manuel was alleged to have stolen was the very fat from their bodies.
Oh, da, da, I knew da. That was coming. That's really grim.
Also, he could make his beautiful, beautiful soaps and sell them to local villagers.
Oh, bleh.
That's why one of his early nicknames was the Tallow Man.
That's a good name to have, though. If you need a scary nickname, the Tallow Man is a good one.
The thing is that having the Tallow Man as your nickname is fantastic. He was lucky enough to have two nicknames.
Oh.
And the second one is even better, in my opinion. I like the Tallow Man. It's mysterious. It's the Tallow Man. But stay with me, Nick.
Okay.
Manuel was arrested in September 1852, and he was brought to trial for the murder of 13 people.
Wow.
People aged between 10 and 47. Mm. So, yeah, women and children here. Now, perhaps Manuel's lawyers could have argued that there was no clear evidence to link Manuel to these people's disappearances, aside from all the soap.
from these big stashes of soap.
Yes.
They've got lovely names like, was it Petunia and Daisy?
That soap, that could be anyone's ass. Well, aside from all the soaps, the bodies were found so torn apart that there was little way anyone could prove that a man was responsible for it. Maybe the lawyers could have reasoned that if Manuel had not confessed.
Oh, well, that's unexpected.
And he used a defence that would knock the court and the world for six.
The villagers were very smelly.
they smelled so bad.
They needed soap. This was the only possible way to get soap.
That would have been ballsy. I would have liked it. You'd be like, damn, that man's sassy. He's awful.
No.
It's a nice guess. It's a nice guess. Manuel admitted that he had indeed killed all of these people, but it wasn't his fault.
The beasties.
He hadn't meant to, because he was cursed.
Right.
Cursed to turn into a wolf.
Was he? Right.
This is the first and only time in Spanish history that lycanthropy...
So that werewolfism has been used as a defence.
Would be used. Absolutely. Yes, it is. He was a werewolf!
Of course he was.
People! Of course he was. I shall read you Manuel's own testimony from the trial. And I won't do it in a Spanish accent because I don't want to be sued.
By Spain.
If I try to do a Spanish accent, all of Spain would sue me. Okay. I love the fucking brass balls on this man that no one could see apparently when he was born. The first time I transformed was in the mountains of Cusco. I came across two ferocious looking wolves. I suddenly fell to the ground and began to feel convulsions. I rolled over 3 times, and a few seconds later I was a wolf. I was out marauding with the other 2 for 5 days. Until I returned to my own body, the one you see before you today, Your Honour. The other 2 wolves came with me, who I also thought were also wolves changed into human form. They were from Valencia.
But had desperately English accents.
One was called Antonio, and the other Don Gennaro. They too were cursed, and we attacked and ate a number of people because we were hungry.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Just a side note in there. I love the fact that he built this story while giving a testimony in court and gave those wolves backstories.
Well, absolutely. I mean, these
Antonio and Don Gennaro. Oh, they were men from Valencia, also cursed. Are you cursed like me? Oh, let us go wandering through the mountains together. What luck. Yes. The frenzied attacks on these poor women and children were carried out by a man who claimed to have been transformed into a wolf. He said he used his hands and teeth to kill them and then ate their remains because he was a wolf.
Obviously.
And how convenient that all of the fat was left exposed for him to use.
I mean, that's a leap. I'm a werewolf. I've transformed into a wolf. I have viciously been out and killed these villagers, these women, because I'm hungry, because I'm a wolf. I have then...
You're with him at this point, aren't you? You're with him.
I've then turned back into a human person and thought, ooh, I know, I need some soap.
Waste not, want not.
See, it's that last bit. Yeah. Yeah. So it's the last bit that he's not convinced me on, I have to say.
Well, you would be in the same mood as the rest of the court at this point, Nick. Prosecutor, I'm going to cast you in the role of prosecutor.
Okay.
Who has an excellent name, if I do this justice. Luciano Bastida Hernandez.
Nice.
Yes. And I can see you as him, leaning against the desk, drumming his fingers, going, okay. Well, going to need you to prove this.
Yeah. I want a demonstration now.
Absolutely. That's what they called for. They said, transform for the court, wolf man. We want to see your wolfy goodness. Ah, Manuel replied, you see, the curse only lasts for 13 years, and that time period had literally just expired the week before.
Oh, how desperately convenient.
It's great that he has the big book of werewolves to call upon, like, oh, these are the rules that we follow.
These are
okay.
The rules of the werewolves. The curse only lasts 13 years. Not heard that one before.
The goddamn drama of it as well. 13 years I was afflicted, but it just ended, so I'm all right now.
13 years last Tuesday.
Oh, God, if you'd only caught me earlier. Yeah. Oh, dude, I still want to change into a werewolf for you. Yeah, so Manuel, he crazy. Well, is he crazy? Is he crazy? It's incredible. It's incredible that he believes this. And so many doctors are drafted in. Doctors, come, please. Why? What the hell is going on here? And the doctors, personally, I love this bit. The doctor's like, yes, we shall prove whether he is sane or whether he is insane. And they use a lot of phrenology to guide their diagnosis.
That's going to help, isn't it? You've got wolfy lumps going on, so...
I know. He's a crazy wolf man. I shall prove it by touching his head a lot. Ah, he has the evil lump.
He's got the lump here. He must be a wolf.
I love phrenology. I do, really.
I mean, it's great.
I want one of those, the busts of phrenology.
Oh, the heads.
The heads where it just says, this bit is evil, this bit is for snacks. I don't think it says that, but I find it fascinating. There's some great books written about it. But yes, just in a trial where a guy is shouting, I'm a wolf, the phrenologists are the least crazy people in there. Like, yeah, bring it on, man. This is now the time to bring up phrenology because you're not going to sound more crazy than this guy.
We're not the craziest in the room, so yeah.
Fill your boots. This is what we've been waiting for. This case, again, inspires more people later. I shall come on to this. But yes, they do all the touchy-touchy head business. Many of them as well. The doctors thankfully reached the conclusion that he has made the whole thing up. Lies. Don't think you need to touch his head for that. But there's an interesting twist here. According to the court records, he was acquitted of 4 of the murders he had confessed to because forensic evidence found that those victims had actually died in real wolf attacks.
Oh.
But he was found guilty for the other 9 because they found evidence that he had butchered them. Yeah, there you go. The victims, Manuela Garcia, age 47, and her daughter Petra, who was 15, Benita Garcia Blanco, 34, and her son Francisco, who was 10. Antonia Land was 37 years old, and her daughter Peregrina died. Josefa Garcia and her son Jose Pazos, who was 21, died. And Maria Dolores, who was 12. Yeah. So he is shit.
Yes.
Yeah. Those are the people he was convicted of murdering. Medical experts claim his actions were entirely voluntary. Yet they could not find a reason for why he did all of this. Perhaps it was just a far-fetched scheme to cover up his horrific soap-making business.
I mean, that's what I really don't get about this, is the soap-making.
The soap-making is taken as fact in a lot of the reports on this one. However, there may be it may have translated into, yes, he definitely took the fat to make soap, or it was a nasty rumour at the time. Right. That got embellished over the years. We could say that about any of the cases that we cover. Maybe there were little bits people say, yeah. I mean, people have said, no, it turned out to be true that he was making soap with people's fat. And given his level of insanity, it's entirely likely. The doctors ruled, the medical experts said he was not stupid. They said, and I quote, he instead turns out to be a pervert, an accomplished criminal capable of anything, cool and collected and without goodness, but acts with free will, freedom and knowledge.
Oh.
So Manuel is ultimately sentenced to death by garrotting.
Oh,
that's a nice way to go. How they do the garrotting?
Is it with like a twisty thing around rope and a twisty thing?
Yeah, in the chair. Yeah. Twisty,
rope around the neck and it gets tighter and tighter. Yes.
Yeah, there's some horrific Until pictures out there off. Of it. But yeah, yeah. Not so good. There was a lengthy ratification process with the sentence. I think it was just part of the legal system at the time where should he have a life sentence? But then there was an appeal by the prosecution going, no, original death sentence reinstated. The trial was sensational for obvious reasons.
Well, yeah, it would be, I imagine, yeah.
I think there's a lot of trials that we cover where it's like, oh, they killed someone. Oh, my God. This was, what the fuck?
Yeah, that's mad.
In a trial, I don't think there was a case in a trial before this where lycanthropy was used as a defence. Certainly there have been rumours and obviously all sorts of folklore about lycanthropy beforehand and apparent real-life cases. But to have it as a defence...
As a legal thing, is an interesting choice.
Interesting, interesting. And Manuel would be known as the Tallow Man, but also the Werewolf of Alaritz.
So I prefer the Tallow Man.
I like the Tallow Man, but also he a goddamn werewolf. The Tallow Man's more mysterious, more kind of...
is more threatening. It's more, it's subtler and more creepy. Whereas a werewolf is like, oh, it's a werewolf.
the Tallow Man
is like, what the fuck? It's like the Slender Man. I mean, is he a good Slender Man or is he an evil Slender Man? You don't know.
No one was thinking the Slender Man was good.
Well, how do you know? If you just said,
It could have been the Slender Man as a kid's book. Yeah, there we are. So, the Tallow Man could be, you can picture that totally as the cover of a Joe Nesbo novel or something, or some sort of Nordic noir.
Absolutely, yeah.
The Tallow Man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, indeed.
Whereas the Werewolf of Alaritz. Oh, well, he's just a werewolf.
He's just a werewolf.
Well, excuse me for liking the fact that the guy went balls out on the werewolf defence.
I mean, good for him. I mean, he had a story and he stuck with it.
He stuck with it. But Manuel would not end up in the chair slowly being strangled to death by the state. No, 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 no. A hypnotist known as Mr. Phillips.
So again, a good, dramatic, subtle sort of name.
Yes.
I like it.
He was from England. He was in England at the time. Yeah. This is true.
Just imagine him as a really sort of tall, gaunt man with a top hat. Mr. Phillips comes in. And then he sort of glides in without moving his legs.
But he's like the gentleman from Buffy.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, that's what exactly is. Mr. Phillips.
Mr. Phillips.
Got a pocket watch as he glides in. His pocket watch is swinging.
I'll say this in a sinister voice, the rest of it. Mr. Phillips has been following the case most closely.
Nice.
and he wrote an appeal to the Ministry of Justice in Spain and said that Manuel was indeed suffering from a psychological condition known as lycanthropy, a condition that he had studied and he had treated well with success, and it meant he was not in control of his actions. Give him to Mr. Phillips to study.
We laugh. His pleas resulted in Queen Isabella II herself commuting the death sentence to life so that Manuel could be studied by experts.
By Mr. Phillips.
By Mr. Phillips. I'll come back to Mr. Phillips in a minute and I will read something from that because it's weird. But Manuel would not be garrotted. He would spend his life in prison. Also, they had hoped. It doesn't seem that Manuel ever benefited from any serious medical study or hypnotic help. Shortly after arriving in prison, Manuel is said to have died. A lot of people say it was from illness, and there was one newspaper report a few years later that said, in prison, the unfortunately famous Manuel Blanco Romesanta, known in all Spain as the werewolf, as a consequence of his atrocities and his misdeeds, and who was sentenced to prison by the court in La Corana, died in that place on the 14th of this month, being the victim of stomach cancer. Very long-winded way of saying he did.
Yeah.
But there were others who said that Manuel really died after he was shot by a guard who wanted to see him transform into the wolf he said he was.
But it was over 13 years ago. It's
he
not
tried
gonna happen.
To tell him. Yes, but there are even others who say Manuel escaped from prison and returned to the mountains of Spain, and there the werewolf roams still. Today.
Now we need a howl now. Can we get a howl?
And again, I don't think I'll title this as the werewolf. I might say the tallow man or something, because I don't want to give away the lycanthropy bit, because I love that. But that is the story of Manuel Blanco Romesanta.
I mean, I had not heard that story, and that's a very good story. That's a good story.
I mean, it's one of those ones you read and just go, just throw every other bit of research out the window. This is what we're doing this week.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can see why I pushed for fat as a secret ingredient so heartily.
No, absolutely. Yep. No, entirely accepted and wise to do so. Yeah. Well, what I do want to do for this one has piqued my interest.
Okay.
So people may remember back in season one, quite early on, we had a friend of ours, Rowana, on, who is a clinical psychologist.
She is.
And she knows many clever things. So I would be very intrigued to hear about the psychology of someone actually believing that they are a werewolf, or in fact we have people who believe they are vampires and that sort of thing.
Oh yeah.
So not just making up a story that they know is rubbish to try and get off, but actually believing that is true, that they can turn into a wolf or whatever.
Such a good idea. Let's get Row on.
What happens to people to make them believe such an out there thing?
Well, it's a genuine condition. Lycanthropy is a general, it's called clinical lycanthropy.
Yeah.
But there have been cases, again, you can delve into this massive, you can go down a Google hole, black hole, looking into this. But there have been lots of cases of people writing about where people believe they've turned into animals. And they either use it as a blackout method. So they go, I've woken up and I don't know what I've done, but I think an animal took over my thoughts. Or they hallucinate seeing certain things and they think the devil has taken over them in animal form. I mean, that's a very, very roundabout way of saying it. But let's get Ro to talk about that. I don't know if she's dealt with many werewolves, but she knows more than us.
She knows you all exactly. Yep, she'll be able to extrapolate something from that better than we can, I'm quite sure.
Indeed. So I will give you the background on... Would you like the background on Mr. Phillips?
Oh, yes, Mr. Phillips, the crazy hypnotist. I want to know.
It's kind of interesting. There's not... You'll kind of go like... I sort of wish that Mr. Phillips was, I don't know, Charles Dickens or something like that. But a couple of random sources in this one, but it's the simplest way of describing it. There's no evidence about the identity of Mr. Phillips, but it was believed that he was the French physician Jean-Pierre Durand de Grosse, who had been exiled to Britain, who later returned to France using the pseudonym Dr. Phillips. It was said that he later influenced, well, his works later influenced Sigmund Freud and Carl Jung.
Ooh.
So, and the Wolfman trial someone has written in saying it began at the golden age of hypnotism. Now, that's a citation that is needed very much in Wikipedia. However, if you know your psychology, if you know your psychotherapy behind it, it is actually at the right sort of time where
it is, yeah.
Where people are starting to use hypnotism really as clinical treatment. Yes, there's a lot of mysticism around it. Yes, there's a lot of people kind of going, ah, I can cure you. Spiritualism, but at the same time, a lot of really, really strong psychotherapy that's emerging that's using hypnotism, which is maybe a little bit shady now, but certainly back then it was like, look into my eyes, you're a werewolf. Okay, fair enough.
Perhaps it was, the whole thing was just a circus trick that went wrong.
It could have been. Again, that's a citation I thought it was worth reading out. I'm like, who was Mr. Phillips?
Who was Mr. Phillips? I'm intrigued by Mr. Phillips.
Because Queen Isabella II did receive that letter, and she reprieved him from a death sentence and said he needs to be studied.
It must have been someone of some reputation or some standing for them to go, okay, fine, let's trust this man.
Or at least to say,
written to us.
Yeah, this guy is not, I mean, of all of the medical evidence, I think, in this trial, again, medical evidence of the phrenologists in there. I mean, it's a crazy trial, but what seems to have been extracted from it is that this man said he was a werewolf. He believed he was a werewolf. They didn't prove that conclusively, you're lying and you murdered people just for the sake of it. There was enough doubt that was caused there, going, do we need to actually examine this guy? Is he just crazy? And did he have an episode of psychosis, which we know has happened in other cases, where people have just suddenly attacked and torn someone apart thinking they were a wolf or a bear or whatever else? And I was interested by the fact that four people had actually died from wolf attacks.
Yeah, that's a curious. So, I mean, was that?
What do you think about that?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it seems, was that the reason why? Perhaps he discovered those people. Perhaps, or perhaps that hit was did happen by wolf, and he was there. And then they did twig. Oh, I can get away with this by claiming it's a wolf or something, because that's what happens with wolves. So that was that.
Yeah.
Some sort of trigger behind him acting that way.
I thought that too, is that if he saw kind of the savagery, he could just blame a load of murders on wolf attacks.
If I'm that bad, that and that brutal, then it can be explained away by wolf.
I went down that route myself thinking, okay, well, has he been an opportunist? I'll kill these other people, make it look like wolves, get the fat, soap business, da-da-da-da-da, and sell all
then
their goods.
Get away with it.
The problem I get to is that to get to court and not just say, wolves did it, rather than going, I am a wolf.
Well,
he panicked.
One of those things that you start off, you start off slow, and then you slowly begin to believe.
Yeah.
So you start off in that sort of, people I was escorting through the hills, and quite legitimately, were attacked by wolves one evening, and this dreadful thing happened. And then, over the course of the next 10 or so murders, he starts to sort of take on this crazy wolf persona type thing. Before then, he actually believes it himself. What initially started off as a way I can get away with this is now actually his own truth.
Isn't it? I mean, he could have seen the bodies and then just convinced himself at the stake, going, did I do this? And that's all it takes, a seed of doubt, going, oh my god, I'm a wolf. If he has blackouts or anything. Just, I still can't get over the backstory you gave to the other wolves.
I mean that is impressive. I mean,
he just genuinely believed they were wolves, and they were from Valencia. It was like, dude, just say you're a werewolf. You don't need to have talked to them.
Or was it three guys doing the murdering? Were there three of them?
Oh, I hadn't thought that.
Yeah, then there were just two other guys that he knew, and they were a murdery team.
And maybe he's that damaged that he doesn't dob them in. They've convinced him that they're wolves. Oh, did they turn up with wolves like coats on them?
Maybe so. Yeah.
And they've been killing people, and then they just put on some fur and went, "Rrr, we're wolves. You're a wolf too. Go on, come on. Oh my god, you're totally a wolf, man. Come on, let's kill these people."
Yeah, could be.
Oh, that's chilling.
So two other people got away with it completely.
Absolutely scot-free. Antonio and Don Gennaro.
Antonio
it's
Don.
Bloody Gennaro from the chef. God damn it.
They're still out there.
During this trial going, I can't believe that worked.
Damn good story.
Thank you very much. And what do you think, people? What do you think of making soap out of human fat? Tell us your thoughts, your theories on this one. Let's just do some podcast psychology on this one. Yeah, let's all just weigh in. Weigh in with your theories. Let's go extreme on this one in the comments. In the comments of this episode, when we post it on Instagram and on Facebook, on Twitter, wherever you use your social media, weigh in with your theories on this. Was he crazy? What do you know about lycanthropy as a defense?
I do want more lycanthropy stories, because I definitely have to be doing some more of those.
There are a few out there. It's a weird one, because it's not easily found. You have to sort of deep dive into things, and I think it's a muddy area. But experts, people who've read about it, are hit us up with those stories. Or do you just think he was a bit of a dick?
There is that version of events too.
Remember, he'd already killed the guy who came looking for money.
This is true.
Yeah.
That is true.
I don't know if he did a wolfy thing on him.
You never know.
We'll put some sound effects into this episode later on of just howling at the moon, or your favourite... Oh, you know what? Tag us in your favourite full moon werewolf themed songs. Go on then.
How many are there?
There's quite a few.
Are there?
You've not seen American Werewolf in London. They crammed a lot in there.
fair enough. No, I have not seen that for quite some time.
Oh, should we watch that later?
Since I was about 15 or something.
I think I've shared... I don't know if I've shared on this feed, but on my own Instagram feed, I have the most stunning print of an artist who's done a print of American Werewolf in London. I will probably share it this weekend so you can see it. It is absolutely staggering. This incredible print of the slaughtered lamb and the people outside it of American Werewolf in London. And I stare at it every day going, ha, 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 I love it. Oh, let's all watch that this weekend.
And if you are a fan of the lovely cannibal nasty tales, then do come and join us on Patreon, where we have a whole host of murderous mayhem for you to enjoy. There's lots of exciting things over there.
And if you do like a bourbon...
Oh, yes.
And if you do like an old-fashioned...
Don't forget the old-fashioned. Don't forget the bacon.
Mix up an old-fashioned. Get some bacon in, because why not? It's the weekend. You know, get your weekend bacon in, double your order, and make yourself a nice fat-wash bourbon, because if you're a serious bourbon fan, it's worth doing.
I am really impressed
by that.
Absolutely.
Join us on Patreon. Leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts about The Poisonous Cabinet. Tell us lovely, lovely things and tell your friends about us. Share the love. Share the poisony goodness. Thanks for listening, guys. We have been the people inside The Poisonous Cabinet. We will see you next week. And remember, your loved ones are trying to kill you.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.